One report finds nearly three-quarters of South L.A. restaurants are considered fast food, where there is no wait staff and food is packaged in disposable containers or wrappers. The California Restaurant Association says the moratorium is misguided. Last Friday, L.A. banned trans fats, which lowers levels of good cholesterol and increases bad cholesterol. For NPR News, I'm Steve Julian in Los Angeles.
Talks in Zimbabwe about creating a new power-sharing government may be rocky. There's a news blackout on the negotiations, which are being held in South Africa, but it appears there is a sticking point on the role of opposition leader Morgan Tsvangirai. South African President Thabo Mbeki insists the talks are going well. I'm Korva Coleman, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from sitforless.com, online seller of the Herman Miller Aeron chair. All Aeron colors and configurations available on the web at sitforless.com.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Warden Martin Subaru in Savoy. At Subaru's assembly plant in Lafayette, Indiana, a zero landfill status is designed to save cost and our future environment. It is part of what makes a Subaru a Subaru. Information online at wardenmartin.com or 352-8910.
Good morning. Welcome back to the second hour of Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers for our program, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, Jason Croft, is at the controls this morning. This past weekend, Congress passed a bill with the hope that it would help the hundreds of thousands of Americans who are in danger of losing their homes as a result of the mortgage crisis. President Bush is not completely happy with that bill, but has indicated that he will sign it. In addition to helping people who are in danger of losing their homes, it will also shore up Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. The two, between them, back almost half of the mortgages in the United States, and there are many argued that they could not be allowed to fail. The consequences for the economy were just too big if they were. In this hour of Focus 580, we'll be talking about the role of Fannie and Freddie, about the effort on Capitol Hill to keep them in business, and perhaps we'll also look for some comments on this housing bill and some of the other things that it does. And our guest for the program is Professor Susan Wachter. She's the Richard Worley Professor of Financial Management. She's also Professor of Real Estate, Finance, and City and Regional Planning at the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania. She does research into real estate economics and urban economics and housing finance. She's joining us this morning by telephone. And as we talk, questions are certainly welcome. If folks are listening here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, the number is 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, so if it would be a long-distance call for you, or you're listening over the air around Illinois and Indiana or on the Internet across the country, either way, you should feel free to use the toll-free line. We'll pay for the call. That's 800-222-9455. So again, 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana and toll-free, 800-222-9455. Any point here, questions from listeners are welcome. We ask only that people are brief in their questions so we can get in as many as possible, but you're certainly welcome to call. Professor Wachter, hello.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for talking with us.
My pleasure.
We appreciate it. And I hope that at some point here you wouldn't mind if I ask you a couple of questions about some of the other aspects of this legislation.
Not at all. No
problem. I figure that certainly falls within your area of interest.
Certainly.
But part of the reason I think that the thing that got us interested in having this conversation in the first place was to talk a little bit about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, what they do and what the problems that they're facing right at the moment. And I think that probably for a lot of people, they may, before now, have had only the vaguest notion of what Fannie and Freddie do, and perhaps now they're maybe not even quite so sure. So probably it would be a good thing for us to start out by just talking a little bit about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. What are they and what do they do?
They are federally chartered companies, and they function in the housing market to purchase mortgages and to guarantee mortgages. And that way they bring more funding to the mortgage market.
All right. So the idea would be that you go down to your local bank or wherever you get your mortgage, they lend you the money. But most banks don't hold those mortgages. They're sold on. And so they would do is then they would come along and they would buy the mortgage from the bank. They'd give the bank some more money so the bank could turn around theoretically and lend that out again and then provide the added security that they say to the bank, okay, if something happens, this goes south, or whoever says if this goes south, will be the guarantee on the mortgage.
That's right. So it lowers the risk for the bank to make the loans. In fact, there is no risk for the bank to make the loans. Banks are basically originating the loans, and the ultimate lender is either Fannie or Freddie or another investor who's guaranteed by Fannie and Freddie.
Mm-hmm. Now, and I suppose we shouldn't be surprised that the two of them are facing difficulties since they're backing these loans because we have seen a number of financial institutions get in trouble, big investors and also banks, because they had so many loans go bad. So
that's exactly right. And after all, these two companies are dedicated to housing. So with the housing market in recession, these two companies are right at the front line of that.
Mm-hmm. I guess, a little bit confused about what exactly the status of these companies are, Fannie and Freddie. Now, these are not agencies of the U.S. government?
They are definitely not agencies of the federal government. So there is ambiguity. They are federally chartered. They are the most important federally chartered institutions in America. But although they have federal charters, they are owned by shareholders. They're listed on the stock exchange, and their stock is traded. They are privately owned. Now, what makes it even the critical issue is, in what sense are they backed by the federal government? Until very shortly ago, a week or so, any guarantee with the federal government was, quote-unquote, implicit. There was a federal tax lien. That is, that they could access funding from the Treasury. But other than that, it was an implicit, and now it's explicit. There is, Paulson has said that the federal government will back up the debt, and even more than that, but the debt guarantee is explicit at this point.
Well, would you be among those who would have said that whether you like the idea of this bailout or not, if Fannie and Freddie collapse, the consequences to the economy would be so great as we don't even want to think about that?
There was no choice. There was no choice at that moment but to step in and keep the mortgage market open. Worst case scenario would be that, right now, it's more than 80% of the loans are being funded by Fannie and Freddie. So there simply would be no funding for mortgages, which is certainly not something that can be contemplated.
Well, if they needed money, Fannie and Freddie, would it have been reasonable to expect or to say to them, well, why don't you just go out and borrow the money and take care of your debt?
Well, of course, that's the key question. The borrowing has been assumed to be just about as safe as Treasuries. And if that assumption that these were Treasury-safe investments had gone away overnight, then so would the investors, and there simply would have been a run on Fannie and Freddie, similar to a run on a bank.
That is, you're saying that people had, if they didn't think that that investing in Fannie and Freddie was as safe as buying a T-bond or a T-bill, then that would have been a serious problem.
Yes, and it's not just a question as safe, but it would be a question of simply not safe, because in a run, the very run itself makes the investments insolvent. And keep in mind that more than 20% of the debt of Fannie and Freddie is held by foreign accounts, and they were following this very closely. And there certainly would have their assumption is that this is as safe or nearly as safe as Treasuries. And in fact, if it had gone from nearly as safe as Treasuries to clearly not safe and insolvent, and will we get our money back at all, there would have been a run on Fannie and Freddie, and Fannie and Freddie would not have been in position to purchase mortgages, which means banks would not have been in position to lend for mortgages.
I think that Fannie Mae and the people who are in charge would have made the argument, still make the argument, that what these agencies are all about were basically helping people buy homes, and not helping rich people, but helping average people. At the same time, other people, and I think particularly this is the kind of thing that you hear from people who are critical about the government coming to their rescue, is they say, well, you know, mostly what Fannie and Freddie are about making money, and that they did indeed make money. And some people argue that their interest in making money just made this whole credit crisis worse. Do you think that is at all true?
Well, all participants in this credit bubble mistook and misjudged, and they certainly were part of it, but they were not the force that created the bubble. The bubble came from the subprime lending loans that were very aggressive, very risky, and specifically, Fannie and Freddie did not make these loans. So we would have had the crisis with or without Fannie and Freddie.
Was this, I think also some people have been very critical of the administration and specifically of the Treasury Department for not taking action sooner, and that is for letting the housing bubble get bigger and letting the subprime market expand, knowing that there was some potential risk there. What do you think of that criticism?
Of course, it's always easy to Monday morning quarterback, but in this case, there were warnings out there, and there were some blinders on the part of regulators. The story still has to be told and analyzed, but there were clearly warning signs in 2006 and 2007, and this simply was allowed to go on too long.
Mm-hmm. Well, and are we talking here about simply, say, lack of oversight responsibility, or are there criminal acts committed by somebody?
Well, of course, there was fraud, and fraud got worse over time. But this, I'm not pointing to the fraud. I'm pointing to the non-prudential lending that was going on, and in fact, got worse over time. So there were loans made that simply were not sustainable, were made to people and under terms which were not sustainable. This just, in fact, was allowed to build on itself, get worse, so that by the end, by late 2006, loans were being made at 100% loan to value to people who did not state what their income was, no documented loans, with teaser rates, that is, rates that would double or triple. Clearly, this is not rocket science. These loans were not made to be paid back.
Mm-hmm. Well, so that kind of thing goes beyond the merely imprudent. Are we talking about the illegal?
Well, no. I'd rather focus on the fact that this was imprudent, because much of this was 100% legal. There was fraud, but the fraud was at the edges. It got worse over time. But even leaving the fraud aside, the legal, what was allowed by regulatory authorities, what was legal, led us into this crisis.
Hmm. We have a caller here to bring into the conversation, and we'd be happy to talk with some other folks. And just let me very quickly introduce again our guest, Susan Wachter. She is professor of financial management at the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania, where she does research into housing finance and real estate economics. We're talking about some of the various implications of the credit crisis that's been going on now for some time. Questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. And we have a caller here in Marshall on our toll-free line. This is line 4. Hello.
Yes, I have two questions. Do you think there's any, criminal or potentially criminal activity with these subprime loans, and if there is, do you think there's any possibility that some people should be put away for these gross injustices of loans that were placed that shouldn't have been placed? And number two, since so many people are involved in these loans, is the fallout cleared out concerning, do we really know how far this subprime mess is? And could you make a comment on that?
Marshall, let me take the second question first. Getting to the bottom of how deep the crisis is happening as we speak. Bank portfolios and many banks do own these mortgage-backed securities, which, by the way, just for clarity, these are not Fannie and Freddie mortgage-backed securities. These are private label mortgage-backed securities, which were basically these subprime aggressive mortgages, which, as I said before, were not Fannie and Freddie purchased. Well, these private label subprime MBS, what is their value now? Their value might be 50 cents to the dollar, 70 cents to the dollar, but that is as we speak, becoming clearer because banks are, in some cases, being forced to mark to market, like Countrywide and its sale to Bank of America. And in other cases, they simply are. Merrill Lynch is pushing to get rid of its portfolio of these mortgage-backed securities and selling it off to the market. So that is becoming clarified. What's not clear and what's extremely important issue, and it's related to the housing bill, is things could get worse, in which case this is a moving picture, and we may know what these mortgage-backed securities are worth today, given today's housing prices, but what if there is further deterioration? And that's a great unknown. Now, to get back to your first question, clearly there is fraud, but we're missing the picture if we focus on fraud alone. I'm not going to posit, you know, what percentage of this is fraud, because this could have happened without the fraud entirely. The underlying legally acceptable mortgages simply could not perform, and that's what's driving the market down.
All right. Well, I hope that. I hope that gets at the question. And so do you think that the market has further to drop?
Yes, I do. Housing prices will drop. This is one of the things that we can actually predict. You know, it's very difficult normally to predict what's going to happen to asset prices. But in this case, it's clear because we have so many unsold homes. We have such a glut of homes for sale that in order to clear this, housing prices will have to fall. There's a consensus, I believe, that housing prices nationally will fall another 5 to 10%, but that's assuming a almost recession, not a recession. If there is a recession, and depending on its depth, housing prices will have to fall further.
And I think too, I've read some predictions that the problem of people defaulting on their mortgages is something we could see a steady level of that going out the next several years.
Yes, I think that's unfortunately the case. As in fact, more homes, people are not selling into this; they're holding on to their homes, and of course, we've got the problem that mortgage credit, despite the legislation, despite the bailout, nonetheless, mortgage credit is getting more and more difficult. So these slow conditions, difficult conditions, are not likely to reverse in the next year or two.
On to another caller. This is someone in Urbana, here where we are, line one. Hello.
Hi. I just have a question about the media and all of this. For the last couple of years, the Bush administration keeps saying, oh, the economy is strong, and then they turn on the evening news, and the evening news says, oh, the economy is strong. Kind of like makes me think back to the Iraq War, where there was no serious or alternative reporting except in the, you know, along the kind of fringes, which most people don't have access to. Am I reading something inappropriate into this? Am I being paranoid? But it just, again, I think we've had the wool pulled over our eyes, and I'd appreciate your comment.
Well, a lot of people did. I don't, in this case, think the media was more at fault than anyone else. These are very complicated products, which have turned out to be lethal. And although if you had studied it, you could see it, these are exotic, new. And I think a lot of the misunderstanding simply was this is just a new crisis. I do think our regulators were slow, and unfortunately no one, even those who did predict that this was likely to happen, this is a problem, no one predicted how deep the problem would go, the fallout to the global financial system. I don't believe anyone knew how deep that could go.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for enjoying your program.
Thanks. Well, do you wonder, I think that a lot of people felt at the base of this and felt some time ago that we had some serious, that the real estate was seriously overvalued, that people were paying an astounding amounts of money for property, really knowing that it wasn't worth that, but that's where the market was. Is that something that, for example, the Treasury Department really, you can set aside the question of should they do anything about that? Would that be the kind of thing that actually anybody could do anything about?
Well, there are a number of people who, in 2005, 2006, in considering purchasing a home, there was a lot of talk at that point of a bubble. But people said, well, we're going to buy this house for the long run. And so, yes, maybe prices will go down, but we're going to be in there 5-10 years. Prices will come back up. And, of course, there was the, in some markets also, among some people, the frenzy of, well, housing prices are keeping on going up. Maybe better buy it today, especially if you need to be in this market. That said, at the same time, and this is actually quite remarkable, at the same time, the cost of credit and the lending standards were eroding, were getting easier. So what you really want to see over the cycle is that lending standards hold. And as things get riskier, that actually the price of the investments, the return on risk, should go up. This did not happen. And clearly there needs to be, going forward, more prudential oversight, more resources put into tracking whether housing prices are based on fundamentals or whether there's a bubble. Could this have been done? Well, there's difference of opinion on this. I believe that this could have been done, but regardless of that, there's even some dispute as to whether this should be done going forward. I think we have to try.
Well, I mean, you know, I asked the question, the caller asked the question, and probably everybody wants to know, is there criminal fraud involved here? And you said, well, there may be some, but the important thing to remember is that under the existing, under the regulations that existed, people could do what they did. They made the loans that they were allowed to make. So now the question is, will there be tighter regulation of lenders so that they will, when they lend money to someone, that they can be assured, as much as you can be assured, that that person is creditworthy?
Yes, there will be. There already is. The Federal Reserve Board has put into place regulations. They are being implemented, new regulations. If these regulations had been put into place when they first were being discussed, in 2005, 2006, we would not be in the crisis we are in today.
And in exchange for the guarantee, the federal government guaranteeing Fannie and Freddie, will they be required to operate differently?
Well, Fannie and Freddie, as I said, were not the cause of this. And right now, there is no discussion, actually, of their being forced to operate differently. In fact, Paulson said, our goal is to have Fannie and Freddie operate as they have been operating. They actually have been a source of support for the market. That said, except, of course, there's a stronger regulator, and the stronger regulator going forward will, along with stronger regulators of banks as well, need to be sure that there's less risk in the system. So I don't entirely exempt Fannie and Freddie, as well as the banks themselves, from responsibility here. You know, in fact, their shareholders, they're not wiped out, like Bear Stearns' shareholders are practically wiped out. But they've taken a very large hit. So the issue of whether Fannie and Freddie also should have been more prudential in this market is a very, very tricky and interesting one, because, you know, if they had been, then perhaps it would have slowed down. Of course, it would have meant that they wouldn't be participating in the market. They wouldn't be doing what they were supposed to be doing, which is making loans available. And, in fact, they were making loans available that people could repay. They were not subprime. They were not risky. They were making plain, vanilla, totally payable, totally reasonable loans. The problem, then, is when the bottom falls out and prices decline, even these loans are vulnerable to borrowers not being able to make the payments, and then there's no choice but to go to foreclosure. They can't sell the property for the amount of the mortgage.
We are a bit past our midpoint here, or maybe right at the midpoint. Our guest is Susan Wachter. She is professor of financial management and professor of real estate, finance, and city and regional planning at the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania, where she does research on real estate economics and housing finance. And we're talking about the current financial crisis in the mortgage markets. Phone lines are open here if you have questions, and we have several people who are ready to go. But if you'd like to call in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455 and toll-free, 800-222-9455. Next caller is in the nearby community of Belgium over in by Danville. Line number four. Hello.
Hello again.
Yes.
Yes, these are overpriced houses being sold to people who do not have the means to repay the loans, being aggravated by a person who owns the corporation or is at least the CEO in the top place, getting bonuses for the more loans he produces this way. There has to be some kind of culpability here.
Well, there sure is responsibility. What you've just described is a fee-driven system where short-run fees for making these non-sustainable loans is returning lots of money to lots of profits to Fannie and Freddie, yes, and to Wall Street, yes, and to the banks that are originating the mortgages. There are fees all along the way.
Yeah, so it's all pretty much greed-driven is what it comes right down to. And the people who did this should, in effect, feel some of the loss, and that means even the shareholders that were looking for more and more returns on their investment.
You're absolutely right. That loss needs to be felt. That's part of the market discipline.
And so now the prices of homes are coming back down to where they really should be, because some of these prices, especially out on the West and East Coast, you saw a house that was no more than a shed and going for $1 million. You go, wait a minute. This is insane.
Yeah, that's true, too, although there's likely to be overcorrection. Certainly, if we go into a recession, the overcorrection in the housing market will interact with the overall economy, and that can lead to a dynamic instability, lower prices, lower fundamentals, and so on. And even right now, there, I believe, is overcorrection in the credit markets, where there is all people see ahead of themselves as disaster. That may be the case, but, of course, it's a self-fulfilling expectation.
Thank you very much.
All right, thanks. Well, is it the case? I mean, can one say that for people who were involved in the whole subprime mess, whether we're talking about the people who originated these loans or whether we're talking about big investment companies who bundled them up and then made them into different kinds of financial instruments, that the people who were involved in constructing that house of cards, they're not just going to walk away with that money in their pockets, are they?
No, hundreds of companies are out of business in bankruptcy. Mm-hmm. Or bought for pennies on the dollar.
I think some people also make an argument that there's some responsibility here to the credit rating agencies, or at least those agencies who were the ones who looked at these bundled subprime mortgages and assigned to them some degree of risk that then investors would use to decide whether or not they want to put their money in that, and that those people were not doing their jobs because they weren't indicating to just exactly how much risk there was involved with these things. Is that true?
Yes, it is true. And I'm going to point to that in a moment, and I agree with you. But I do want to also come back to this question of the system. So let's go to – there are lots of players who are at fault here and who had bad incentives, including the rating agencies. And the rating agencies are looking at those practices, and regulators are looking at the rating agencies. And there will have to be some response to this issue. There's already some beginnings of that. That said, it is not simply the rating agencies. First of all, the rating agencies themselves are we can't depend, and we should not. Investors should not be depending only on the rating agencies. Investors are putting their own money into this, and they must have the market discipline of analyzing. In most cases, in fact, investors don't simply take the rating agencies imprimatur as this must be the case. They do their own research. So the rating agencies, nonetheless, did call these triple A's, and they clearly were wrong. That part of it is there's a systematic problem which we have to come to a more widespread understanding of, which is the following. The more the credit was eased across the board, the more housing prices increased across the board, which made it seem that these were great assets. So that positive feedback loop is going to get us every time. And if we think that this is a one-off and it won't happen again, Now, maybe it won't happen again for 5-10 years because we will have this memory, and maybe it'll come in a different guise. This is a vulnerability. This kind of asset bubble vulnerability needs to be more widely understood. In fact, the savings and loan crisis was another version of this, and it's happened elsewhere around the world.
Well, could it really be that those people who were bundling up subprime mortgages and creating these new investment instruments and peddling them, and then those people who were putting their money into those, could it really be that all of these people did not appreciate the level of risk that was associated with these things?
Well, that's a very good question, and I don't think we know the answer to that. I think that some people really did not, many investors did not understand the risk. Many investors, such as, let's say, pension funds, did rely on the rating agencies' ratings of these securities. Others may have known the risk, and they did, after all, get somewhat higher returns, so they misjudged how deep the risk was. And there may have been, a combination. Some really did not understand the risk. They thought these were AAAs. And even without just accepting the rating agencies, they said, well, these are, after all, and here's the key, these are, after all, mortgages that are backed by U.S. homes. U.S. homes have never fallen in prices since the Great Depression for the nation as a whole. So these are really solid investments. The fact that housing prices, in fact, not only go up, but they go down, easily. Some people can get caught up in this. Housing is concrete. Housing prices don't usually fall. There are lots of stories around that sort of thing. And some investors, I'm sure, got caught up in that misunderstanding.
We have other callers. Let's go next to line number one. This is someone listening in Urbana. Hello.
Oh, hi. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really glad you mentioned the savings and loan debacle because it's a crisis is an understatement. It cost about $1 trillion, the U.S. taxpayers. Plus, if you go to 5 years ago or so, the Federal Reserve site had a report on the collapse of long-term capital management in 98, and that was an eye-opener. I doubt anybody at the Federal Reserve even read it. I did. It was rather deep and detailed. But and then you have Enron. So these ideas that you have that say these new investment vehicles are not so new. They're just sort of like another version of the paper tiger. And my problem with most of economic theory is that it's purely a psychological phenomenon. It's not a science. You can't predict the outcomes because you're dealing with the attitudes of individuals or the market or the, Adam Smith would say, self-centered purchaser or the person in the market. So you're basically stuck with, like, Greenspan lowering rates to 1%, thus fueling this housing boom, because where else are you going to put your money? Because all the Enron-type vehicles were frauds. So I see this more as a systemic problem, not dealt with by regulation, and the deregulation by the Republicans over the last 20 years has caused a lot of these problems, sticking taxpayers, us, with trillions of dollars in issues. We have to pay this back because of, Wall Street, which I find reprehensible, and I know people on Wall Street. And it's just really upsetting to me that this thing can be sort of like discussed as if we're just another one of these, like you said, well, maybe people will forget in 5 years. Why should they forget? Why isn't everybody upset about this? Why aren't we having, virtual, retraction, like riots? Because we're getting stuck with this stuff. I just find the whole economics programs and all this stuff they're canards. I mean, you people sit there and talk about this stuff, but you guys, you look at problems after they happen. You have maybe one or two predictors, or they're called soothsayers or spoil sports or whatever. I find it just absolutely humorous.
Well, listen, I was one. I hear what you're saying. I was one of the people who in 2005, 2006, saying this cannot go on. This is a disaster in the making, and I don't want to make light of it at all. I mean, people have lost their homes.
I mean,
children
have
lost
their
homes.
Lost,
this is a,
I mean,
this is a national tragedy.
Yes,
and you're absolutely right.
I do want to,
and I don't think you're saying this, but I want to. The problem here isn't that there isn't analysis. SNL crisis also.
Mm-hmm.
We could analyze these problems,
mm-hmm.
and there is the potential to analyze and to act prudentially. And I'm not an economic historian, and the facts still have to come out, but I think they should. There even were some efforts. There were, I wouldn't call them soothsayers. They're just people who understood. Ned Gramlich is one, who was he was a Federal Reserve Board governor, who was warning. He passed away right before the crisis, and he had a book, and he was warning. And if we had listened to Ned Gramlich again, we would not be here. So, but let's go forward for a moment and analyze.
I agree with you. There will be analysis. Congress is so inept, and the leadership, let's say Bush, standing there like, as the one earlier caller said, the war in Iraq is this, and the economy is great. It's like we're being, propagandized. I mean, I was in marketing for years, and I know a lie when I see it. And the problem with this is still, you're right. It is worse. It is could be catastrophic. Because if it turns to be a negative psychology where you get everybody goes, oh, the hell with this, everything. And that was the depression. I don't think that's going to happen. But it's amazing. I just really bothers me about it. Thanks a lot. I appreciate your work. But I just wonder if anybody's going to listen. Thanks.
Well, there's a question. And three of the last recessions, and this, of course, is the most serious in terms of consequences crisis we've had, last three have been asset bubbles. And we need to have a new focus on these issues.
Just to pick up on one of the points that the caller mentioned, and that is the relationship to deregulation and all of this. And I think that some people have now said, finally, there will be some kind of a move towards some kind of re-regulation, and say that's a kind of ironic to have that coming from a Republican administration, since generally speaking, Republicans have been very pro deregulation. And I'm sure that they're, depending on their interests, there are probably some Democrats who would too. So I don't know that it's exclusively a partisan kind of thing. Will we indeed see some move toward re-regulation in the financial markets?
Absolutely. Absolutely, we will have a re-regulation. And prudential lending will be part of the re-regulation. Right now, the problem is fear in the market. And actually, the re-regulation, I believe, will help set standards so that we will have more confidence going forward. It's important. We need it. It's critical that this happens, but it's not going to get us out of the immediate crisis.
All right, let's go next to a caller in Champaign, line two. Hello.
Well, the interesting part is that if you wait long enough, and being sort of on the bottom of the list here, is that a lot of the issues that I was going to ask about have already been taken. But, it really was a sad commentary along this whole thing when that was actually driving supposedly prosperity or whatever we went through, was the housing market. The improvements and all the money that was spent and all that kind of stuff. I mean, wasn't that the case?
That's a good point.
Yeah, and shouldn't we have been investing in other things to... they say in stock that we should diversify, and what happens is that there was no diversification in our economy. It was driven, and certainly by the war, but we didn't make a lot of money from that. That just cost. I'm also critical of the politicians. There's so much influence in the banking industry on our, politicians, that a lot of these things should have been taken care of, and even with the credit card industry, I think 20%, 18% are juice loans, and they were protected, and what was the other thing that they did was that you could actually bankruptcy in the whole bay. I mean, I don't know what you have any comments on that or not, but,
Well, they all went in the same direction of increasing people's ability to take on risk, whether it was wise or not. By the way, the initial housing price boom, which got us out of the 2001 recession, wasn't completely a bad thing. This was, after all, people had built up tremendous equity in their homes. So the ability to borrow down somewhat, it got out of hand, and it got out of hand not simply because of the traditional mortgage, but because of this invention of these new mortgages, which were non-prudential, non-sustainable.
We just have about 10 minutes left. I want to thank the caller and hope he wouldn't mind if I go on because the lines are full. I want to try to get in as many other folks here as I can. Also, I would like to introduce again our guest for anyone who might have tuned in the last 10 minutes or so. Susan Wachter is professor of financial management and professor of real estate, finance, and city and regional planning at the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania. She does research in housing finance, real estate, economics. Questions are welcome, 333-9455. And toll-free, 800-222-9455. Next, we have someone on a cell phone, line 3. Hello.
There's been some talk that we've been victimized by criminals, and I'm more of a mind that we've been victimized by ideologues, people who seem to worship markets. I'm studying a little economics, and I think markets are a useful tool, but I don't worship them, and the perfect market that gives the perfect solution is rare, and the artificial markets that have been created tend not to be that perfect. I have another observation, too, about question is, where were the ideologues located? Which agency was taken over by them, and where did the system really fail? I have an observation based on participating, representing a minor party in a foreclosure condominium, a comparable unit, the same development sold for $95,000 during the foreclosure. At the foreclosure sale, the trust that was one of these sliced and diced mortgage holders bought the property back in '83, and within 5 or 6 weeks, they sold the property for $60,500, which was substantially below what the market price appeared to be. So those folks who think that foreclosures disclose market prices, I think, are a bit naive about how these lenders behave. It's very hard to understand why they sell these properties at the prices they do. Thanks.
All right. Well, you can comment on that any way you like.
Well, there's a lot there. I think that markets are very useful for the information that they provide, except when they fail. And there certainly is market failure here. Market failed in part because, as I'm going to be, I'll repeat myself, the credit instruments that were being made available simply were not sustainable.
Well, one other thing I want to have you talk about while we still have time, and I'll try to get in some other callers, is that I talked in the beginning about the fact that the Congress has passed this bill that will do a number of things. One is to allow the Treasury to back up Fannie and Freddie. The other is they're trying to help people who are in danger of losing their homes because after the market collapse, they found themselves ending up owing more money than the house was actually worth. So apparently what's going to happen is that with the backing of FHA, the idea is that people are going to be able to renegotiate their loans. I wonder whether you think that's adequate. And ultimately, the question of it seems that somebody is losing money here. How exactly is this being paid for?
The taxpayer is behind the deal. This is no doubt about it. But it doesn't mean the taxpayer necessarily is going to end up owing a lot or indeed anything. The CBO has, the Congressional Budget Office, has analyzed the cost of this to the taxpayer of being perhaps zero, and it could be, of course, significantly positive. It all depends on what happens to the housing market going forward. And the point is that this bill itself could help shore up the housing market. If it does so successfully, then maybe we are near equilibrium, as economists think about it. That is, the fundamentals, if you look at the status of the market right now, could drive prices down another 5-10%, and hopefully they'll find a bottom there, and then the taxpayer will not, in fact, be at risk. The other possibility is that recession occurs, perhaps it's a deeper recession, not just a modest one, and housing prices continue to fall, and in that case, there will be redefaulting on these mortgages potentially, and the taxpayer will be at risk.
I wonder to what extent what happens now from here on in has to do with true hard economics with dollars and cents, and how much it has to do with how people feel and whether they're willing to try and be positive, or whether they fear that things will continue to get worse.
Well, I certainly hope it's based on fundamentals, and the fundamentals also, it's extremely important that the overall economy performs. Right now, you know, we're not in a recession. Of course, we don't know that for sure, but as of most recent, we're not. All of this is critically important. We're at a very tricky moment. And I do want to go back to one of the previous callers asked, and your questions related to that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just psychology. Psychology matters, but it's not just psychology. The fundamentals matter as well. And one can look at the fundamental determinants of housing prices, and in the long run, that's what prevails. Psychology can take us up, and psychology can take us down, but in the long run, there are fundamentals which drive the value of housing just like any other good.
Another caller here. Next is Peoria, line 4. Hello.
Hi. I want to make a call attention to another burden on the taxpayer that's a result of this stuff. It happens a lot here in Peoria. Landlords will snap up a lot of these houses and put them on Section 8, which is a federally funded rent subsidy, which pays highly inflated rents. It's based on, I don't know what, the rents in Washington, D.C. or something. But no, I mean, they try and do it right. But I know a house right behind me is going for $850 a month, and it probably should be torn down. A lot of, you know, the conservatives always talk about redistribution of wealth. Well, and every time something like this happens, cheap stuff is bought up by wealthy people. It really is another redistribution of wealth, and they're subsidized by the taxpayer. That's all I have to say.
All right. You want to comment on that?
I think that is a comment as opposed to a question.
All right. Well, we can let it stand then. We'll go next to another caller, someone on a cell phone, line 1. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi. I want to make a comment that I think, if you bear with me, there's not enough depth or cynicism, shall we say, in what's going on, because a lot of callers have talked about who is at fault and who is culpable, and I want to present an idea, because I'm a real estate investor, that explains everything. I had been to California a number of times over the last 4 years, realizing that it was unsustainable, as you have said, and prices were going up. I could not understand why banks and financial officers would let this happen, because it was not related to people's incomes. And I finally figured it out. In a normal house with a normal family, you might sell the house once every 10 years and move. And therefore, you have to pay capital gains, generally at 15%. In California and in the East Coast, people were flipping houses 4 times a year, which meant that they had 4 capital gains taxes. In essence, the government has increased the payout as taxes for capital gains by almost 50-fold over a 10-year period. It's not normal housing, and therefore, it is my belief that this enabled the Bush administration to pay for the Iraq War. It's a very cynical comment, but I think that's reality, and I think that's where the culpability lies. Thank you for listening.
I actually do not agree with that. The capital gains tax was changed, first of all, so there actually is less capital gains recouped. Secondly, if you go through the dollars of this, this is fee-driven incentives, but these are small. These capital gains are not really nearly as substantial as to motivate this sort of thing. I do want to mention another point. This is a very regional problem, although a large part of the U.S. is right now much of the U.S. is caught up on it, but the severe problems are very concentrated. There are parts of Texas, there are parts of going straight down, the middle parts of the U.S., some parts of that, and also even within areas that are hard hit, like the Washington, D.C. area, Washington, D.C. itself. So there's something about the workings of housing markets itself which makes some regions much more vulnerable. And that has also taken policy analysts and government and banks and lenders by surprise. The fact that so much of the U.S. is in this crisis and so much of the U.S. is vulnerable, but not all the U.S., is interesting. And part of what's happened is U.S. housing prices have become much more volatile than they were even 10, 20 years ago. We have now, used to be when we'd have a run-up, there'd be a run-up in places like California, but really not elsewhere, maybe Boston, maybe California, and that's about it. We now have a scarcity of housing, which is really much more pervasive across the U.S., which makes supply more rigid and makes housing prices more likely to take off and be in a bubble. I say all this, one, because it's a warning going forward that, yes, we can have this kind of volatility. Other countries have this kind of volatility historically. The U.K. has been in a severe housing crisis several times. They're now in one again. So this is something that we now have to have on our radar screen. Obviously, we will. But it also explains part of why, because it is new to the U.S., that not everyone was eyes on this critical issue that it could pull the economy down.
So we're halfway through the year now. Any feeling on your part of what the rest of 2008 is going to look like?
Well, I'm hoping that the export market is going to help pull us out. And so if we have a recession, it's mild. And the housing crisis will de-accelerate it. I'm hoping there's some small signs that it is already, that is, that prices, while they're still declining, the rate of decline is slowing. In fact, most recent data coming out of the Office of Federal Housing Enterprise Oversight indicates that the California market prices actually, for at least a subset, are not falling. It's possible that this year, end of 2008, we might be at least seeing the end of the tunnel, which hopefully would be in 2009. Hmm.
Our guest, Susan Wachter, is Richard Worley Professor of Financial Management and Professor of Real Estate Finance and City and Regional Planning at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania. Professor Wachter, thank you very much for talking with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Programs here on WILL are made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, presenting the final Krannert Uncorked for the season on July 31st in the Krannert Center lobby. More information available at krannertcenter.com. Before we go, just a reminder that you should stop by our website. You can listen that way if you like. You can also go back and hear past programs that you might have missed, or maybe there's something you'd like to give a second listen to. Interviews from the Afternoon Magazine, from Focus 580, all our local production is there. There's also information about programming on radio and TV. You can sign up for podcasts. That's all on the website. It's will.illinois.edu. And that's it for us here on Focus, but we want you to stay with us. Much more coming up as part of the Afternoon Magazine. The host of the show, Celeste Quinn.
Thank you very much, David. Coming up today in the 1 o'clock hour of the program, we're going to talk about creative play. Children's psychologist Susan Lynn will be our guest. She is the author of The Case for Make-Believe. Let's turn our attention now to what's happening in Kansas City and in Chicago. In Kansas City, September wheat, that contract is trading at 818 and a half, down 6. December, 842 and a half, down 4 3/4. September wheat in Chicago trading at 788, down 9 3/4. December, 810, down 11 3/4. September corn, 583, up 1. December, 602 and a quarter, up 1. March, 622, up 1 1/4. May, 631 and a half, down 1 1/2. August soybeans, 1378, that is down 22 and a quarter. September, 1378, down 18 and a quarter. November, 1383, down 13. January, 1392, down 21 and a quarter. August meal, 372 even, down 380. August oil, 5775, down 155. At the Merck in Chicago, August live cattle, 9757 and a half. That's up 50. October, 105.55, up 75. August feeder cattle, 112.40, up 125. September, 112.80, up 170. August lean hog, 77.85, down 70. Now to the outside markets. September crude, 121.75, down 298. The U.S. dollar, 73.32, that is up 67.